Hey everybody, Nate here. Before the show, I just wanted to take a minute to talk about our sponsor, the Snack Nanny. The Snack Nanny is the latest, greatest spill-proof bowl. It's the first snack bowl for kids with a self-closing door. The Snack Nanny allows kids to snack freely without overeating, keeps kids entertained, and prevents them from creating a mess for mom and dad to clean up. Kids and parents love the Snack Nanny. It's easy to use, easy to clean, and includes portion control features that only the Snack Nanny offers. To order, go to www.snacknanny.com. or order from Amazon. Remember, you support our sponsors and they support us. Thanks, and Nihei Debiru. Everybody, and welcome back to Chop Talk. I'm your host, Nate in England. If you listen to the show on iTunes, please write a review and give us a 5-star rating. Also, don't forget to like the show on Facebook. This week's guest is Thomas Groindahl, a 5th-degree black belt in Shindo Musuru Jiu-Jitsu and 3rd-degree black belt in Daito Ryu Aikijitsu. He currently operates a series of dojos in the Pacific Northwest that are affiliated with the Honshu Aikijodokai located in Oita Prefecture, Japan. Tom spent 10 years in Japan, including a year in Nagoya and Tokyo as an exchange student, 6.5 years in Oita Prefecture, and 3 years living in Osaka. He also works in the translation interpretation industry and is a partner in Translation Business Systems Japan. Tom is currently the chief regional examiner for Western Canada in the Canadian Kendo Federation and is working with others towards the establishment of a Jodo section in the All United States Kendo Federation. He hopes to support the spread of both Daito Ryu and Shindo Musu Ryu throughout the Americas. To find out more about this week's guest, Thomas Groindahl, visit his school's website at www.hoshudojo.com. That's www.hoshudojo.com. You can find his contact information on the website. Thanks, and enjoy the show. This week's guest is Mr. Thomas Groindahl, a 5th Dan in Jodo. How you doing, Mr. Groindahl?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Great. Well, hey, I've had a lot of karate guys on here and a few other different martial arts, but you're the first official Jodo guy I've had on, so it's really good to have you on and talk to you about this. If you don't mind, would you just tell us a little bit about your dojo, where you're located?
Sure. So again, my name's Thomas Groindahl. It's a pleasure to meet you. And I am based in Portland, Oregon at the moment. I lived in Japan for about 10 years, and then I moved back to North America. And I was in Vancouver, British Columbia for a couple of years, and now I'm down here in Portland, Oregon. And I teach two arts at the moment. I teach Shindo Musuru Jiu-Jitsu, or Jodo as it's known in short.
Sure.
And I teach Daito Ryu Aiki Jiu-Jitsu.
Okay, that's great. And when did you get started in the martial arts?
So I first stepped on a mat when I was 15. I was a geeky, unself-confident kid, and somebody told me that if you did Aikido, you didn't have to have any strength. You could use their strength against them,
okay.
Which appealed to my lack of self-esteem, and so I went in there, and you know, of course, the reality is far more complicated than that, but I ran into a great dojo and stayed with it for several years.
You know, I think that's great. I think a lot of the people can relate to sort of that geeky kid. I know I can myself. Everybody who's seen The Karate Kid, that's a pretty common story there. So was it that martial arts experience that kind of got you interested in Japan, or were you into the anime thing? Were you into the, you know, Seven Samurai and all that? You know, or was the martial arts, was that sort of the first experience with Japanese culture?
So as odd as it might sound, for a guy who grew up in a rural town in Michigan, Japan was the path of least resistance.
Okay.
So basically, I did German and Spanish in high school, and it was easy, unlike, you know, math and science and all those hard things.
Sure.
So I just simply looked for what might be easy and what cross what fit well with the martial arts that I was already doing, and so I ended up taking Japanese in college.
Oh, wow.
And then I just ended up sort of flowing to Japan to pay off all those student loans.
Oh, that's great. So you were a language major or Japanese major?
Yeah, I was a Japanese language major, and I ended up going there as an exchange student, and then ultimately what really kept me there, I was in the JET program. Mm-hmm. I was there for 6.5 years in a small fishing town.
Oh, wow.
I had a good job, and I met my teacher, my current teacher there.
Mr. Goto, well, that's great that you had the knack for it. You know, it's been definitely an uphill climb for me learning Japanese. I do not take it to it naturally. I took Spanish in high school, and I think I barely crawled by with a C. You know, so I'm jealous of guys like you who can pick that up really well. And isn't that part of your job now? Aren't you doing some sort of translation work?
Yeah, I'm a manager at a translation company called TBSJ, and we handle legal and financial translation.
Oh, man.
And for a while I was a freelance translator, which is a great way to read a little bit about everything in the world. So.
And probably some stuff that's interesting and probably a bunch of stuff that's really not. I can imagine translating a bunch of business law from Japanese to American. It's got to be kind of frustrating at times, or you want to pull your hair out.
I'd say I've chewed my fair share of sawdust.
That's great. So you went over there as an exchange student first. That's a little bit unusual. You know, I know a lot of people will go over there, like the JET program, which it sounds like you were in, or with Nova or Aeon, EOS, or one of the other translation services. But you were actually attending a Japanese college.
Yeah, so I was a Japanese major, and one thing about Japanese, and I would say most Asian languages, to be fair, is the grammatical structure is different, the phonetic structure is different. You really are going to have a hard time getting by just, you know, studying off a podcast and some books. You kind of have to go there and drown yourself in it to break the hump of the language. And so I went as an exchange student twice, actually, once for a short-term exchange and once for a long-term exchange. And then ultimately I moved there.
Yeah, that's great. I definitely understand what you mean about the trying to learn it. You know, just, you know, when I went over there, basically what I knew how to say konnichiwa, and I knew a bunch of terminology from karate and the other martial arts I'd studied. But it'd be like learning the terminology from baseball and trying to carry on a conversation. I mean, you meet somebody, say, you know, foul ball, home run. It you can't exactly carry on that conversation.
It's just good enough to get you in trouble.
Yeah, exactly, and you wind up getting in a lot of trouble. So
the ideal language learning environment is sink or swim. So my advice is whatever language you're trying to learn, go there, get in a romantic relationship with somebody you hate. That way you're constantly fighting, and no matter how frustrating it is to not remember the vocabulary, you just must get your point across.
Right,
and then you'll learn language at an astonishing pace.
That's a really good idea. So it sounds like you had you also had some frustrating experiences with Japanese women.
I'm going to say no comment to that and just leave it there.
I need a couple of beers before I start commenting, but I understand where you're coming from. So how about the JET program? So did you transition directly from the college into that?
Yeah, so I was a Japanese major in school, and I went in as a coordinator for international relations, which is it's really a sandbox position. You can kind of do whatever you want depending on where you are. But I was a CIR in a small town, and I was doing all sorts of crazy stuff. That was a good time. It was a good experience.
Yeah, that's good. So with the JET program. You know, I wound up, before I went over there, before I moved over there, I went to one of the large conferences that Nova had when they're trying to recruit students. It was in Indianapolis. So I drove there, sat through this conference, did my little interview, did all the different exercises they had, met everybody, shook all the hands. And at the end, they sat down with me personally, and I think everybody, but they sat down with me and they had me fill out this questionnaire, and they said, do you think you could see yourself teaching in Japan for 1 year? And I sat there and I said, no.
I cannot. I can't. I cannot do this. And that was it. I thought I couldn't do this. It was going to drive me nuts. And so when I decided to move over there, I was going to try to do it as an architect. I had some money in the bank that I've been saving up for this purpose. And I just squirreled away as much money as I could. And with the idea that, hey, maybe I had to live for a few months or a year without really making any money, but I could do it on the cheap and I'd be okay. I got over there and had tried to get a few jobs doing architecture, but wasn't having much luck. I'm not sure if you noticed this, but they don't like the foreigners doing anything else than teaching English.
It's pretty darn challenging, especially if you don't have language skills.
Yeah.
Which, in all fairness, if someone didn't speak any English and wanted to become an architect in the United States, it probably wouldn't go too well for them.
It wouldn't go too well, but I know a lot of them, and especially they can draw. But you see the same thing here where, you know, you might get a cab and there's an Indian guy driving and it turns out he was a doctor back in, you know, back in Calcutta.
Looking for a way to gain an edge on the competition? Want to give your body some much-needed relief and relaxation? Try Medical Resort ATAC, Okinawa's specialist in sports therapy and wellness care. ATAC offers customizable massage therapy. Try their oxygen chamber for increased metabolism and faster recovery from injuries. Or take their stretching course to improve flexibility. ATAC is used by professional athletes from the Ryukyu Golden Kings, FC Ryukyu, and Ryukyu Corazon. Stop into their center Monday through Saturday at 12830 Oroku in Naha City, Okinawa. Call 098-859-1890 or visit them on the web at www.sanso-atac.com. That's www.sanso-atac.com.
Let's announce a few upcoming events. On April 24th and 25th, Robert Bowles will host the ISA International Martial Arts Seminar in Fort Wayne, Indiana. To find out more, visit www.shuri-ru.com. From June 11th to 15th, Neil Stolzmark will hold the 14th Annual Warrior Gashku Seminar in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. This year's guest of honor is Minoru Nakazato, 10th Dan and head of Shorinru Shorinkan. Find out more at www.authenticancientarts.com. From June 26th to 28th, Philip Keppel will host the 31st USKK International Karate Kobudo Championships Seminar and Tournament in Peoria, Illinois. To find out more, go to www.uskk.org. From October 2nd to 4th, also in Peoria, Illinois, Joseph Walker will host the Kagami Bikari Gashku. Go to AOK Karate on Facebook for further details. And finally, the weekend of November 6th, 7th, and 8th in Cincinnati, Ohio, the Kosho School of Karate will host Jodo and Iaido expert and the 2014 Japanese National Bato Do Champion Sensei Chusho Fukuhara, along with Shuriken expert Ikenaga Sensei and top student of Goju Ryu's Yoshio Kuba, Miwa Kanazawa, along with several other members of the Meisui Kan Dojo in Naha, Okinawa. To find out more, email koshoschoolofkarate@gmail.com or call 513-510-3844. If you have an upcoming seminar, tournament, or other martial arts event, please let us know, and we'd be happy to announce them on the show. But right. I did have a couple interesting offers. I had one where a guy offered to give me a job where I would work for him from 8 a.m. to 11 p.m., 6 days a week, for, I believe it was 11 months, for no pay. And if I did that, he would falsify my visa and let me stay in the country.
Wow. That's not exactly what I would call appealing.
Not exactly. So I said, thanks, but no thanks. And I wound up teaching English. I did it a little bit on the more independent route. Started out with a few students, then went to the Eikaiwa, which for anyone who's hasn't been over there, that's the English Conversation School. Wound up in a high school, and then on from there. So with the JET program, you were in a in a high school, grade school? What were you in?
I was not an ALT, so I wasn't teaching English.
Oh, wow.
I was in a city hall and in a tiny little town. I was the first non-Asian foreigner to ever live there. So it was an interesting experience, you know, and that included some amount of English teaching, but also it was a real sandbox kind of position. So eventually I was doing historical documentaries and putting on festivals, and I was teaching. I did some workshop-based education for prejudice prevention.
Okay, that's very good. So you had to teach the people in the town not to be prejudiced against the one white guy?
Yeah, actually, it was an odd juxtaposition of being a white person in the United States, because my in to the seminar would be, you know, here's a white guy talking about how not to be prejudiced against foreigners. But since the prejudice that I experienced was all of the Gilded Cage variety, I would basically take that as an excuse and then make workshops about gender roles and other completely unrelated things.
Okay, well, the Gilded Cage variety, I'm not sure what you mean by that exactly.
Well, the Gilded Cage variety is essentially, you know, everybody adores you, everybody thinks you're handsome. If you're not doing so great with the ladies or the gents, if that's what you're into, just, you know, go to a country where being tall and blonde is enough to basically win you all the lotteries. Oh, man. And, you know, similarly in terms of work, the fact that you can say konnichiwa is enough to impress most Japanese people. If you're a serious practitioner of the language, you're probably going to blow their minds.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I remember just the people when I walked into McDonald's and I could order without them flipping over the plastic menu for the gaijin, everybody right. was amazed.
And the cage side comes pretty strong glass ceiling, which I think you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, exactly. You know, man, I wish I could have used some of that Gilded Cage stuff, to be honest with you. I was in Okinawa, so as far as the ladies go, anybody who was interested in dating one of these, you know, tall honkies, picked out a Marine when they were about 18, 19 years old, had a horrible experience, and didn't want anything to do with them for the rest of their life. So I didn't exactly have the best luck over there. But the one thing that you could do when you're in Okinawa is, see, Okinawa has its own language. So if you learn how to say, instead of konnichiwa, haisai, which is hello in Uchinanguchi, Okinawan language, you know, you could walk down, I would walk down the streets, the covered markets, where they have all the little old, you know, 140-year-old ladies selling their vegetables. And they'd look up at me, you know, I'm 6'1", and they're, oh, scary, kawaii. And you just look down at them and you go, hi, Sai. And then all of a sudden, they're your best friend. Oh, hi, Sai, Chiragagi. And they're hugging you, and then they're your best friend. So if anyone's interested in picking up, you know, 120-year-old ladies, that's your move.
More power to them.
Yeah, exactly. So the town you were in, you wound up in Beppu, Oita, in that area? Is that where you wound up?
So I was in Oita Prefecture. I was in the far easternmost point of Oita Prefecture, which is about an hour and a half from Oita City. Oita City is a couple hundred thousand people, and my teacher lives in Beppu, so I was about 2 hours from where I used to live. And I ended up in that little fishing town, and there was no practice place to speak of, so I started teaching Aikido. At the local sort of gym.
Wow.
And then that went on for a while, and then one day one of the other foreigners wanted to go to a kendo class.
Okay.
And I was sort of the go-to guy for martial arts, because if a foreign teacher wanted to do some martial arts, you know, they would ask me who to go to or whatever. And anyways, I ended up accompanying this guy to his kendo class, and I wasn't terribly interested in that. But I noticed next door was a group of people doing Jodo. The Do was of interest because of my Aikido background, but more importantly, Goto Sensei was stalking around the room teaching. And, you know, sometimes you get a feel for someone's potency just watching them stand and walk and talk and do things. And that was definitely the case there. So I, as the story goes by now, I went down from the sort of seating area and I kneeled for the duration of the class, and then he came over, and I think the story has probably gotten a little out of hand by now, but he...
You challenged him to do a death match, and he beat you, and that you were obligated to become his student, right?
Not quite that bad, but he said something along the lines of, I don't like foreigners, and then I said, okay, what do you want? I want to learn. Okay, be here next Friday. So that was the beginning of our long arrangement.
Oh, that's very cool, though. You know, I had a similar experience. You know, well, let me ask, with Aikido, there was a little bit of the Jo involved in that, if I'm not mistaken. They do some of the basics. Is that correct?
The basics is a word I would maybe take umbrage at, just because I come from a classical style which is really built around the Jo. Okay. Whereas the Jo is kind of, in Aikido, I think it's something that is used for other purposes. You know, it's maybe not the most efficient way to use a Jo. Maybe it's more a good way to express what they're trying to do with the hand.
Okay. But they're swinging out of room, and you at least had some familiarity with it.
Yeah, typically.
Yeah, you know, I had a, when I went to, I knew about the Jo. You know, I come from originally the karate background, not originally, I still am. But Robert Trias, he was the first person to teach karate in the U.S., and he was the head of the United States Karate Association. And he had a student that did similar to what you did, had moved to Japan to teach English or go to school, and wound up somewhere in some town and had learned some of the Jo and sword. And so when he came back, he taught the guys that are around that dojo, again, some of the basics. You know, maybe not all the exact details like you were mentioning earlier, but, you know, some of the basics. And so my first teacher, Shihan Walker, taught us some of that, which is basically, you know, the first five strikes and Renai, which was kind of what everybody had learned. And I really liked it. But there wasn't any more to get. So when I was traveling around Japan, when I first moved over there, I went around mainland Japan, actually visiting Beppu Oita. So we may have been in the same town at the same time, but we didn't cross paths. You know, trying to find something similar, you just can't get in. You don't know where to go. You don't know where to look. I don't speak the language. So when I finally made the move down to Okinawa, which is where I was going to stay for karate reasons, obviously, I wound up finding this group and just kind of lucking into it. And the same thing that you did, this class was going on. I sat down, watched for 2 hours, and then they asked if I was interested. I said I was, and I was in. So I think that's something that, you know, if anybody is over there, or anybody's interested in really learning that, be patient. You know, if something's going on that's interesting, sit down, watch, don't make an ass of yourself, and you can get in.
Mowari no hito ni sa wo sukete imasen ka? Anata no karada wa kyusoku wo hitsuyou to shite imasen ka? Sports massage, kenkou no specialist, medical resort ATAC wo ichido torai shite mite kudasai. ATAC dewa okyaku sama no karada ni awaseta massage wo okunaimasu. Mata, ATAC no sanso shitsu ni mo torai shite mite kudasai. Taisha koujou, kega no soki kaifuki ni kikimasu. Junansei wo takameru, stretching course ni mo torai shite mite kudasai. ATAC wa pro chimu, Rukyu Golden Kings, FC Rukyu, soshite Rukyu Korazan no senshu mo ryo shite masu. Zehi ichido goraiten kudasai. Open, getsuyobi kara doyobi made, Okinawa ken, Naha shi, Oroku, 1-28 no 30. Denwa bango, 098-859-1890. Homepage mo cheko shite mite kudasai. www.sanso-atac.com www.sanso-atac.com Ego, Portugalo go, Spengo, Nihongo ga hanaseru staff ga imasu.
Hey everyone, like the show? Enjoy hearing interviews with martial artists from around the world? Then share it with a friend, family member, co-worker, everyone at your dojo, your fellow karateka. You can find new episodes every Sunday at choptalk.podbean.com. That's choptalk.podbean.com. And don't forget to like the show on Facebook. Thanks.
Remember, if you have an upcoming seminar, tournament, or other martial arts event, let us know, and we'd be happy to announce it on the program. And now, back to the show.
Yeah, my experience has always been that the Japanese of my age and younger have very little interest in martial arts.
Yep.
The martial arts are fundamentally, in a downward, I would say spiral, but they're in decline. And there are a lot of people who have put a lot of time into things that they care about and are very interested in learning, very interested in teaching. And if you show up with the right attitude, you're in. You know, I mean, my teacher said that. I think he was half just testing me to see if I was just casual or if I was actually interested.
Just to see your reaction was.
The other side of that I would bring is, you know, if you're doing a classical tradition, if it's not an open-ended art like Aikido or Kendo, where if it doesn't end in Do, you know, if it isn't for the masses to better themselves, mm-hmm. but it's a Ryu, then, you know, it might be a little harder. You might have to prove that you're willing to be loyal and preserve what they have unaltered.
Right.
But still, most people are going to be excited if you're a person of some intellect and some talent and some desire to do it right.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, what were those early classes like? So you got your foot in the door. What did they do once you were in?
Just like anybody else, you know. You never know how a student's going to shake out until you give them 3-4 years. So, they taught me actively. And, of course, there was a certain amount of international exchange that occurs in a situation like that. I think I was Goto Sensei's first foreign student.
Mm.
But it's just like any other class, really. I'm sure they taught me exactly the way they would have taught a Japanese person.
Yeah.
And I spoke extremely fluent Japanese at the time, so because that's my profession.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that side of it wasn't really a big deal. It was just the bigger question was how serious I was. I was still young at the time and wasn't as devoted as I am now. I'm sure that gave them some frustration, but Goto-sensei stuck with me, and luckily I'm still here today.
That's good. We had some of those other things, like those women you weren't going to mention earlier going on the side, I'm sure.
Yeah, actually, it was the festivals.
Oh, the festivals.
If you ever plan a festival, that's something to keep in mind. They usually suck up about a third of a year.
You know, my buddy, my former roommate from Okinawa, is from New Zealand. He's over in Fukuoka right now, and he's taking part of a festival where he has to wear the fundoshi, the traditional mm-hmm. Japanese thong.
Sure. Yes, that's a good word for it.
So were you guys running around in those, or was yours a little bit more modest?
No, my festivals were international music festivals.
Oh, okay. So people kept their pants on for the most part.
Well, you know, we won't comment too deeply on that. But yeah, the theory is you keep your pants on and you keep it family friendly.
Right, at least until you get home. So you mentioned the differences between the type of arts before, the jitsu, the do. Could you go into it a little bit? Because with Jodo, even though it's not very well known, even in Japan, I think what people know is what's the standards, which are the Seitei Katas, which are generally overseen by the Zen Nippon Kendo Renmei, the All Japan Kendo Federation, or the Canadian Kendo Federation.
The U.S. Kendo Federation.
Or the U.S. Kendo Federation.
It's actually all overseen by the Japanese Kendo Federation.
Okay.
There's a committee called the Jodo Committee. And the core difference between what's often called the Koryu, which is a classical style, and the Seitei or Gendai Budo is a sort of longer way to say it, but the modern styles.
Mm-hmm.
One of the differences is purpose. The other difference is governance.
Okay.
So the difference in purpose is the Seitei or these standardized modern styles are there for social betterment. They're a very open door. We want to, you know, improve people's health, improve people's mental well-being, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And they tend to be simplified, sort of an entryway. For me, as a guy who's really more on the classical style, they also provide a gateway, because you need to, at least in my dojo, you need to do at least a year of the standard curriculum, which is not under our control. You know, it's dictated by the All Japan Kendo Federation before you can do the classical style. So that allows us to keep that side pure. We don't get dabblers doing classical stuff.
You know, that seemed to be my experience in Okinawa, in Japan as well. You know, I had done the Seitei for about a year, maybe a touch more, because I had to run back to the States for a few months at the end of that before they let me go into the Koryu.
Yeah, and the Koryu on the other side, you know, it's a classical style. You're reaching back potentially 1,000 years, or in my case, a little over 400 years.
Right.
For a style that had a purpose at that time, and its purpose now, you know, it sort of depends on the style, but generally, there is a strong desire to maintain a cultural tradition in its most pure possible form. Hmm. You know, if you have 100% of something and you pass it along, inevitably, human fallibility might reduce that to 99%.
Sure.
But if it's at 99% right now, what I've received, I'm going to do my damnedest to keep it at 99%.
Sure. And it's difficult now because, 400 years ago, guys were walking around medieval Japan challenging each other to duels. So a lot of the moves in the kata, you can see the practical application because, you know, you just had to hit a guy over the head. But now, you know, there's not that many sword fights. I mean, a person's, you know, probably, what, one or two sword fights a week tops? I mean, you just don't get a chance to practice this stuff in the field. So it's real important to try to pass it on as close as you can.
Sure, and to pass it on alive. So you have a kata, and you work within the constraints of that kata, and you try to hit the other guy, and they try to hit you back. And, you know, because there are constraints, you are able to push the envelope in a much more realistic way, ironically sometimes, than, say, throwing pads on everybody and letting everybody whack away.
Right.
The kata provides a way to be safe without using equipment, which then inevitably alters the equation. For the same reason you don't punch bare-fisted the way you punch with boxing gloves. You put kendo armor on, you know, and inevitably the way people cut starts to change.
Right.
So the kata is a safety mechanism for that, and you'll find parallels in the way, you know, the U.S. Army trains combatives.
Really? How so?
They give you moves and they let you go. They don't necessarily shove a bunch of gloves and head masks on you and you know, let you go to town on each other, because that's great exercise and
sure,
it's a good, possibly martial arts, and it can be great for teaching you how to be hit, but it's very different than breaking your hand on somebody or something like that.
Hey everybody, Nate here. I just want to take a minute to talk about our new sponsor, the Micro Bar. The Micro Bar is an innovative, cutting-edge new type of seating that's perfect for restaurants, cafes, bars, and even the party room at home. The Micro Bar is a very versatile product, and it's perfect for residential or commercial applications. And it can be used alone or grouped with other Micro Bars to create multiple seating arrangements. The Micro Bar is perfect for anywhere that seating and standing people interact. So whether you're looking for a new piece of furniture for the breakfast nook at home or you're remodeling a restaurant, go to www.microbar.net. That's www.microbar.net. Or call 513-232-9405. Thanks again for supporting our sponsors. Looking for great entertainment? Want to find the best deals on food and drinks? Use the PubPal app to find great establishments near you. View daily specials, find live bands, karaoke, even poetry. If you're looking for something to do, PubPal is the answer, and it's only a click away. Download the app on the Apple Store and get the Android app on Google Play. And don't forget to like them on Facebook. Visit PubPalUSA.com to find out more. That's PubPalUSA, PubPalUSA. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that, because I think a lot of the people that are listening are primarily karate guys, is you know, in karate, the katas are longer than judo. In China, they're even longer. So you might have 100, 200 moves long. Karate might be, you know, 50 to 100 moves. In judo, the katas are typically very short. There's a couple long ones in there, you know, but usually you're talking about, you know, maybe 5 moves max. And if you don't get the job done when you're fighting a guy with a 3-foot razor blade in those 5 moves, well, that's probably going to be it. You know, I guess realistically, when they're fighting these duels, it wasn't like a Quentin Tarantino movie. These things were over probably pretty quickly.
Yeah, and there's 2 things to understand about Joe. One, it's a broomstick. You know, it's really not a magnificent weapon with a sharp iron tip on the end.
Right.
So you're going in there with one hand tied behind your back, which means, in my mind, I think of it as something like a graduate school art. Mm. You learn how to do regular swordsmanship. You're kind of maxing out what you feel you can learn in there, and then you see this other thing, which is far more difficult to achieve victory with, and the ways they've come up to do it are ingenious, and you train that, and then when it comes to the throwdown moment, you go, hold on a second, you draw your sword and you cut their head off.
It's there for
self-betterment, and the level of sophistication involved in actually successfully beating somebody with a broomstick when they're holding a 3-foot razor blade is why Shindo Musoryu as an art has been able to linger longer than perhaps many similar sword equivalents.
Absolutely. And you know, it's interesting because you said it's maybe a graduate school that in the olden days, these guys would have practiced with their sword and the jo as a supplement or something in addition. You know, even now, and let me know if you have or haven't had the same experience, the guys that I met that were doing judo were also high-level martial artists in something else, whether it was kendo or iaido or karate or Okinawan kobudo. Most of these people had studied something else seriously and then started up the jo sort of as a supplement or just something else to keep their interest.
Yeah, and also I think, you know, when you're doing hand-to-hand arts, this might not sound complimentary to Joe, but just in general, you reach an age where it becomes difficult to continue punching the makiwata or whatever it is, and you seek sort of greener pastures for your joints. And I think Joe is, just by virtue of what you're doing, pretty good for longevity.
Yep.
You know, when you hit that 55 line and your shoulders hurt and your elbows hurt, you can still do Joe pretty well. You don't have to do any jumping kicks or anything really sort of crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I knew a couple guys in Japan who were in their 70s, maybe a couple of them rolling up on 80, who had had a couple hip replacements, a shoulder replacement, and they started doing jo for, what they go, rehabilitation. I do rehabilitation, Neto. To try to keep moving, even though the guy was a judo champion when he was 20. Now he's 75 with all these injuries, and he can still keep doing something.
Right, and I think for most arts, this is true if you have a sensitive teacher, but I think Joe offers a reasonably good range. You know, my students, I get a very solid sweat out of them in every practice.
Yeah.
And I make sure they go home sore, but, you know, if somebody is 70, they're going to get a slightly different menu than someone who is 20,
yeah,
by which I mean a very different menu.
Yeah,
which isn't to say they're not going to learn, it's just that, you know, that they're past the time when they need to be forging iron, so to speak.
Right, exactly. Well, hey, before we run out of time, you know, another thing I find is you've really been making an effort to, you know, get Jodo out more well-known in Canada, America, North America in general. You know, could you talk a little bit about that? And I also noticed on your website you're doing something you're calling distance learning. So somebody, because there's not that many of us doing Jodo in all of North America, it sounds like you're really making an effort to find a way to expand it.
Okay, so part of the success for Jodo hinges on us building a community of like-minded people who like each other and are willing to work together to bring over the kind of people we need to hold tests and you know, good seminars and all that sort of thing like that. Mm. There's strength in numbers. And so I teach at least once a year in dojos in, of course, my four main dojos, which are my dojo in Vancouver. Two of my students have dojos in the Seattle area. Mm. I teach in Portland. I have students in California and a student in Cancun. And
I'd be going to Cancun.
I'll let you know the next time I go down there. I'm all about the Budokation. So, and there's plenty of video material on the internet. I have a YouTube channel with most of the Seiten Kata in several repetitions.
Oh, I was watching some of those earlier today. That's a great reference for anybody who's out there who wants to get a little refresher on the kata or see what it's about. Yeah, absolutely. That was definitely check out the website.
Yeah, and you know, it's hoshudojo.com, by the way, hoshudojo.com. And I think there's plenty of ground that can be gained through a little bit of video feedback, and then, you know, you meet at the national seminar, or I hold seminars in Portland, Oregon once every 3 months. That people can feel free to join and get a serious dose of training.
Oh, that's great. Well, I know you and I have one coming up. I think we're going to see each other in Guelph, Canada next month. Looking forward to that. One of my guys is going to be going up for EQ. It was a little bit of struggle to get that approved, but it looks like we got the thumbs up.
So the seminar you're speaking of is the Seidokai Seminar, Seidokai. It's also called the Guelph Seminar. It's been going, this will be the 25th year. Mm. It is definitely the preeminent event for Jodo in North America.
Wow.
It's sort of organized by a gentleman named Kim Taylor, and he and his minions bring over two Hachidan every year, which is 8th degree black belts. I mean, wow. It's definitely the best place you can go to find out what's happening in the Seite world. And also, it's usually, you know, 50 to 150 people. So it's a good place to just see who's out there, make some connections. You know, maybe you go there and find out somebody in the same state is doing Joe.
Yeah, absolutely. That's great. Well, one more time, why don't you give us your contact info, where people can find you, where they can find your website and your dojos.
Okay, well, people can easily find a Hoshu Dojo related, Hoshu is, I guess, our group, a Hoshu Dojo through hoshudojo.com. Which is hoshudojo.com. And we have people affiliated with us teaching in Cancun, Los Angeles, Portland, and then East and West Seattle and Vancouver.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Well, Sensei Grindle, and I butchered your name at the start of the program. It's not Grindle, it's...
It's Groendahl, but a la Beowulf, I'll go with Grindle. That sounds pretty sweet.
That sounds kind of badass. All right. All right. Sensei Grindle, thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us, and we'll see you next month.
Everyone, like the show? Enjoy hearing interviews with martial artists from around the world? Then share it with a friend, family member, co-worker, everyone at your dojo, your fellow karateka. You can find new episodes every Sunday at choptalk.podbean.com. That's choptalk.podbean.com. And don't forget to like the show on Facebook. Thanks.